Summer. There's just something about it. The blistering sun. The aroma of a barbie.
Getting stuck to the seat in the car.
And of course, cricket.
That's how it's done.
From these tiny seedlings will grow graceful willows. Not planted simply to please the eye, but for a specific purpose.
Need the edge? Has to be Irwin. Available at Bunnings Warehouse. Irwin. Trade strong. Yeah. This is Triple M's Willow Talk.
Yeah, and how good is it? First show up, Gus Warland here, and I got John Hastings and Brad Haddon in the studio with me. Firstly, Hads, how are you, brother?
Mate, I'm really well, and it's a pleasure here to be with you, Gussie, and to reacquaint myself with Big John Hastings.
Exactly.
The last time we met was the Silk Nightclub on Racing Toot Toot's home.
Oh. Now, is that a discussion, Hastings, that we should have at this initial stage, or do one of those ones we can sort of tease throughout the show? That one sounds like a ripper.
Yeah, 2011 World Cup was an absolute pearler. That didn't play a game, trained absolute backside off, and had fun off the field. So we might touch on that a little bit later. But yeah,
fantastic. Yeah, certainly good times. And watching both you blokes over your career, obviously cricket tragic I am. I just love spending time with you guys. And this show's all about just getting a bit of an insight into cricket from people that have played the game at the highest level. Obviously, Hosto, lots to talk to you about in terms of your own health and how many people love you and want to make sure that they know that they're thinking of you. And also, Hads, for you, the Australian cricket team at the moment, not travelling that well, but you're a part of it. And what we really want to do is focus in on that, because there's so many people that love the game and they really want to love the game, you know, and at the moment it's quite a tough thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing about the Australian cricket team. We've got a lot of work to do at the moment. We can't hide behind that after the events of South Africa and moving forward. But the one thing there is, there's a lot of love out there for the team. People want the Australian cricket team to do well. That's a big part of the Australian culture. So for us, I know we're working really hard behind the scenes to get the results that we need. And we've just got to be patient, because they'll come.
Now on Triple M's Willow Talk.
We need every meeting.
It's the Aussie Team Talk.
Catch up on Triple M's Willow Talk anytime through the Triple M app.
Duke, let's start with you, big fella. When the Australian team was first selected, you looked at it. What did you think? Couple of debutants.
Oh, what I did think, Gussie, is there was a lot of Victorians in there, which I did like. But
what do you mean? You're a magenta Sydney Sixer man now.
No, I've got my Victorian passport now, since I've been here for about nearly 12 years. But okay. No, I thought it was good. I thought there was no real standouts in there. I think guys were rewarded for their performance. I'd love to see Marcus Harris in there, because I think what he's done over the last 2 years in Sheffield Shield cricket is fantastic. He scored more than any other at the top of the order. Glad to see Uzi Khawaja back. He's done a remarkable job to get his knee up and firing. There's still a couple of little question marks on the shuffle of the batting order, which Hads would probably know a little bit more than me, but I'd love to see Harris and Khawaja open. I'd love to see Finchie just slide down the order a little bit as well. And the only really question mark for me is whether or not Head or Marsh play for me. I've got Hanscom in there, because I think what he's done in the JLT One Day Cup and then in the JLT Sheffield Shield as well, he's been absolutely fantastic. I think he's in career best form, so I'd love to see him in there as well. And then the bowlers just pick themselves, don't they?
Yeah, the bowlers, that's the one thing. We look at our attack and go, well, that's world class. Every team in the world would like our three quicks and obviously Nathan Lyon. Hads, was it a difficult side to pick? And like Hastings said, it's nice to see a bit of reward for blokes who have played well at Shield level.
Yeah, I think the most pleasing thing to me about the side is that Chris Tremaine and Harris are in the mix. I think one thing we've got to get back to with Australian cricket is rewarding performance. And if you look at over the last 2 years, they're the leading batsman and the leading bowler in state cricket. So we've got to get back to rewarding those performances. I think a couple of things we'll have to look at. Whether you play, do you go in with your six best batters? Do you play Mitch Marsh as the all-rounder? Because one thing Mitch did do last summer, he scored hundreds. So do you see him as an out-and-out batsman, or does he play that all-rounder role? So an interesting to see with the openers. And Jono Haso said there about Finchie down the order. I actually like the combination that Khawaja and Finch came together in the UAE. I thought they really complemented each other. But another thought there is you play your best batter at three. And I think in this squad, Usman Khawaja's our best batter and Harris deserves a crack.
In terms of Khawaja, you being part of the Australian mix, was there any thought that he may not be fit enough to play? Because that innings in the UAE was just something to behold. One of the greatest of all time, people are saying, especially on foreign soil. He's worked very hard on social media. He shows us every day what he's doing. Did you ever think he may not quite get up for it?
If I'm honest, I didn't think he would after the first diagnosis. I didn't think he was going to come up. But Usman's changed a lot over the last few years. His attention to detail now with his preparation has been outstanding. And the reward in Dubai with that innings, that was just one of those days where he just put his hand up and said, guys, follow me. I've had enough of these collapses. I'm going to fix this. And that's the one thing I liked most about it was the character he's shown in that knock.
Hey, Sto, what about the Marsh brothers? So much talk about them. You know, people either love them or they don't. There's no one in the middle with them. They always seem to, when they're just about to perhaps miss out, score runs for Western Australia.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on them and their position in that top six for Australia?
Oh, look, I'm a minority probably in terms of that I absolutely love these blokes. I think they're fantastic human beings. What Mitch Marsh offers as a cricketer is fantastic. He's not one-dimensional. He's got it all. He can bowl, he can field, he's vice captain as well, so that gives you an indication of the esteem that the Australian cricketers or the Australian setup hold him in as well. But for me, Sean Marsh, yes, okay, might have had a bit of a lean spell in the Test arena, but what he's done in Sheffield Shield cricket and the One Day arena over the last 12 to 18 months has been great. And now at a time where we need senior boys around, I think we absolutely need these two in and around the squad at least.
Hey, so with Sean Marsh, he's performance in state cricket and one day cricket's been outstanding. And last Australian summer, he was one of our leading batters, but down at number five.
Yeah.
We moved him up the order in the UAE, probably a role that at Test level he hasn't quite grabbed hold of. What do we do there? Do you leave him because he's a senior player? Do you put him up the order, or do you say, you know what, you've done a really good job at five. You stopped a lot of those collapses last Ashes.
Yep.
And do you play him there and move everyone around him? Because Pete Hamskin, to me, is a natural fit at number four.
Yeah, I agree with you, Hads. I think, for me, Sean Marsh plays a lot of his cricket at number three for WA, so he's accustomed to that. But as you said, last year he really stopped some of those collapses and was the senior batter. So it really depends on that opening combination for me, whether or not if Khawaja opens, and I think Sean Marsh should go to three, and I'd love to see Petey Hamskin in there at four, but I don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I suppose that's the real question mark over this team leading into the first test is just that batting order and how we structure it up for the summer.
So, boys, let's talk about the first test team, but let's talk about your first test matches. Hey, Sto, first cab off the rank for you, mate. Where was your first test match and tell us about it?
Gussie, mine was actually Riggy Ponting's last test. So it was a pretty emotional week. Joshy Hazlewood and myself went over. It was after Peter Siddle bowled that marathon spell with Benny Hilfenhaus. Faf du Plessis batted all day at Adelaide Oval and blunted us and they got a draw and the boys were cooked. So they needed reinforcements over. Joshy Hazlewood and myself went over and as I said, it was pretty emotional sort of a week and I was just happy to just slide under the radar and let the great man Riggy Ponting take the floor. But it was interesting because I just thought Hazlewood for sure would play in front of myself. So as it turns out, I think he had a little niggle in his foot and that's probably why I got the nod. But it was interesting. The morning of the game, I still didn't know. My family was over there. My mum and my wife came over. A couple of good mates came over. And then all of a sudden, you know, hat presentation from the great man Adam Gilchrist. And then about 5 minutes before we're about to go out, I'm thinking, how good is this? We're going to watch Mitch Johnson and Mitch Stark rip into these South African batters. And as we're walking down the stairs, Pup goes, by the way, you're going to open from the Inverarity end. I went, excuse me? I said, I haven't opened the bowling for Victoria for about 2 years. And here I am, nervous, as you can imagine. I think first ball went down leg side. As it turned out, Eddie Cowan dropped Hashim Amlar at mid-wicket. I still haven't spoken to Ed about that since. It's been about 6 years.
At least you got a hand on it.
Amlar at the time, probably the best batsman in the world, or certainly one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then got my first test wicket, knocked a guy called A.B. de Villiers, I think it was.
A.B., do you know him, Hads? Have you played against him?
He's one of the best I've ever played. He could turn a game like Brian Lara.
What a fantastic first test wicket. Talk us through that moment for you.
Yeah, so it was, I don't know where it came from, but I started swinging the ball away, which never happens for me. So all of a sudden it started swinging, got him just into a sort of a false sort of drive, caught Michael Clarke at first slip, and then second innings, none for 100. So welcome to Test Cricket, John Hastings. But the thing I did love the most was after the game, we got knocked over in 4 days and they rolled in 42 bottles of Penfolds Grange for Ricky Ponting's retirement present with personally labelled where he got his 100, what year it was, what ground it was, all that sort of thing in Louis Vuitton suitcases. So I'll remember that forever.
Fantastic. So what was it like, just the feeling, your childhood dream, all the people listening now, me, just wanting to have that baggy green. What was that moment like to share it with, like you say, a few mates and your family your beautiful wife?
It was amazing. It was just one of those pinch yourself moments. And probably still now I look back and memories start floating back of things that you sort of probably in the zone that you don't normally pick up. But, you know, it was just an amazing week and topped off by a bit of a party or a soiree for the great man Ricky Ponting back at Adam Gilchrist's house. So it was absolutely amazing.
You've got to take us there. Take us in that little soiree for a moment if you can.
Well, I didn't really know too much about red wine at the stage. So I was the youngster in the side and Adam Gilchrist said, can you just go and get another crate out of my cellar of that stuff that we've been drinking? And I've gone, yep, no worries. And it's a pretty big cellar. It's massive. It's almost the size of half of my house, I reckon. But went in there, tried to get it. The door closed behind me, and I didn't know that it was sort of this sort of fingerprint access sort of thing. So if you don't mind, Gilly, got locked in there, and there was a few tasting glasses over in the corner with a corkscrew. So I thought, what am I going to do here? I've got to try and drink my way out of here. So I didn't know much about red wine. Picked the bottle off the shelf. It turned out to be a pretty expensive bottle of Henschke Hill of Grace. So I don't know if everyone knows their wine out there, but Gilly wasn't too happy about that. But it was an amazing night, and he put on a really good show for Ricky. And it was an amazing, amazing time.
What about you, Hads? What was it like when you debuted?
Yeah, mine was an interesting one because I debuted for Australia in 2001 in one day cricket. Then my test debut was 8 years later in Kingston, Jamaica.
So who was the bloke keeping you out of that team?
Mate, Gilly, he was that resilient.
No, not a game he didn't play.
No, he was a phenomenal athlete. We see everything he did on the field, but his preparation and everything was first class. But yeah, so I had to wait 8 years later. And my family had to make the trip over to Kingston, Jamaica. So, we couldn't get further away. And it's all the same feelings John was talking about. I was excited to finally get the opportunity. I remember the great Ricky Ponting giving him a cap sitting on the ground. Then about second over in, I think I can catch anything. The ball's going everywhere. I'm diving everywhere. And I had Mitchell Johnson in one of those spells where the ball wasn't quite going where it should. So I thought I could dive in front of fine leg and stop one, and I got one right on the end of my finger. And as a wicketkeeper, you know where you've taken the nail or you've broken your finger. And I knew straight away. I thought, oh no, I've waited 8 years to get here. I've broken my finger, so I've just sort of turned to Huss, who I knew well, and I said, Huss, I've just broken my finger. Looking for some sort of, oh, you'll be right, mate. Just get onto it. That's what Test cricket's all about. And he goes, I'm not keeping hats. and that was the end of it. At the time, I went to see the doctor after play. We didn't have one on tour that time. And I went to see, it looked like Bob Marley, actually, the doctor sitting on his balcony looking over the Caribbean. And I put my hand down, and he reached for a pair of scissors and flicked my nail off.
Oh.
And he said to me, your finger's broken. It's not just infected. And I said, no shit. the finger got infected. Huss said the same thing after I showed him after. Oh, I'm not keeping. So no, I played the three tests. It was a phenomenal experience. And it's everything you dream of. It's the moments you remember. Those little moments on the field. And there was some, but it's just that camaraderie at the end of it. Being in an Australian change room with your baggy green, sitting there in your tights. Your family walk in, you've got a VB in your hand.
Yep.
And they're the moments you remember. So John's talking there about
it. I just see your boys' faces. you're just there, aren't you? You're just smiling and having Absolutely. A good time. And I'm sure all our listeners think, geez, I just love that sort of moment. That, for you, keeping with the finger, you didn't want to give up the position, obviously. How did your performances go? Like, did you go well enough to think that you would be sweet?
Yeah, I was comfortable, but I was always brought up that you never give a guy an even break. And especially with being a wicketkeeper, they're 10-year positions. If you look at Phil Emery for New South Wales, he had the position for 10 years. Heels had it for Australia for years. Gillies was the same. So I was sort of brought up to say you never give a guy an opportunity to take his spot. And starting my career, if I had said, oh, I've got a broken finger, it's a little bit sore, someone came in, did well after Adam's time, I might have never got the opportunity to play again. So I didn't think too much of it to the end of the test match. I was happy to miss a couple of one days at the end but to go for surgery. But it never crossed my mind to not play the remaining test matches. And that's what's playing test cricket about. Sometimes you've got to do things that are uncomfortable. But once you walk onto that field, mate, I was injury free. I had to perform and I had to make sure I was doing my job for the team. Otherwise, you're out.
Now on Triple M's Willow Talk. It's the Big Bash Report.
That is a huge hit.
Catch up on Triple M's Willow Talk anytime through the Triple M app.
Hey, Sto, let's go to you first, cab off the rank, because I interviewed you for Cricket Tragic on Fox Cricket only about a month ago, and you're there in the magenta of the Sydney Sixers. And before we go into the Big Bash, let's talk about you and why you're not playing.
Yeah, Gussie, I was looking forward to getting into the magenta and getting back home to Sydney and playing with a couple of old mates, but unfortunately, I've just had this bit of an issue when I've been bowling. It's pretty much, it's got a little bit of vasculitis, which is inflamed blood vessels in your lungs. And every time that I'm bowling, the pressure at the crease just bursts little blood vessels and little bleeds in my lungs. So it's not overly ideal. It's sort of when I'm walking back to my mark, it's like I'm coughing up like phlegm, but it's actually blood. So, you know, my family was pretty happy that I made the decision to not sort of take the risk, I guess.
It's disappointing for the Sixers fans as well, because John, traditionally, he's a homegrown New South Welshman.
You know, we used to drive in out from Hawkesbury. It was about a 77K one-way trip. I spent half my first rookie contract of $9,000 on tolls, I think, getting into the SCG. But
well, you're much loved, and so glad to have you as part of our team here on Triple M on Willow Talk. Let's talk Big Bash right now, John, especially the big movements from one franchise to the other. If you could talk us through what you think are the big ones.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of movement, actually. Probably one notably was James Pattinson for me. I think he's just sort of getting back into his work and he's going to be cherry ripe come Big Bash. So he's actually gone from the Renegades to the Heat. So I think he'll be a handful up at the Gabba. Another big one, and probably none bigger than this man, Dwayne Bravo. He's gone from the Renegades to the Melbourne Stars, which is something that you just do not do. So no. I'd look out for that one. Another one that we probably should mention as well is Dan Christian. So he's just signed a 3-year deal for the Renegades coming from the Hobart Hurricanes. So that's some three pretty big moves there.
Off the top, I sort of said that, you know, even if you don't love cricket, you always have the Big Bash on, and people have fallen in love with that game and just having it in the background. You're obviously someone that stayed at the Sixers, played for a long time, had success, won the whole Big Bash. How do you look at this Big Bash now? Who do you think are favourites to win and those big movements that that John just spoke about?
Yeah, it's going to hurt me to say. I actually like the Thunder list this year. I think they've recruited really, really smart.
I think a whole lot of people just drove off the road in Sydney, mate. What are you doing?
No, I'm saying I like their list. I think their recruitment's been smart. They've gone for a class batter in Joe Root, who traditionally doesn't sound like a great 2020 player with the power, being able to clear the rope. But his finesse and being able to get off strike, his record in that form is outstanding. If you put him in the middle of a Shane Watson and a Josh Butler, it starts to complement your list. One disappointing thing with us is that we've lost Nick Madison. When we win games and chase totals or set up big totals, it's normally off the back of Nick Madison really driving the game forward. So we've got to find someone that can play that role. And I think we might have found someone in young Edwards.
Did you boys know who Jack Edwards' under-13 coach was? Do you guys know who that was?
No.
The great Gus Wallen.
There you go. No Mountie Cricket Club. He was in my son's team.
Claiming
under 12s,
like
13s and 14s. I am now. Can I talk about sort of with all these movements and stuff, is there a lot of loyalty? Hey, Sto, I'll go to you first. When it comes to Big Bash cricket, or is it just be looked upon as you're jumping franchises, you're having a little bit of fun, and it's sort of 6 weeks at the end of the year that you sort of, you know, just take the cash?
Well, it's not state v state anymore, is it? So, I mean, it is franchise cricket, and that's probably the thing that people sort of miss a little bit out there, is that there is a lot more money in it these days as well, and a lot more opportunities being 8 teams. So the guys that are just used to playing in the 6 states sort of setup, they've got a lot more opportunity, a lot more scope to navigate your way around and get a little bit more in the back pocket, I guess. But I don't think there is as much loyalty these days.
From a recruitment point of view, I think it is harder for the Sydney and Melbourne teams. We've got two teams that we've got to fill.
Yeah.
I think other states have an advantage over the bigger cities because they've only got one team. And you can keep your players, you can build a bit more of that that culture that you like, it's a one city town. So that's the battle for the bigger states. But, mate, the Sixers always found a way to win.
Let's talk about our wonderful women. They're the best in the world. Now they've got that trophy. They beat England in the end quite convincingly.
Yeah, Gussie, how good was it? And I love what Meg Lanning and the Australian girls have been doing over the last probably 5 years now. But in a pretty dark period for Australian cricket, I think they've been a real shining light, haven't they? And how good was Alyssa Healy? She got player of the tournament. And just Georgia Wareham coming back in as well with her leg spinners in that final was fantastic. She's a young girl from Warrnambool down here in Victoria. And I just love what she brought as well. Ash Gardner under pressure was fantastic. And for a team that has Elise Perry batting at number 7, how much depth have they got as well? Rachel Haynes was batting 6. So they've really got something good going on there. And I love what they brought. And congratulations to them. They were fantastic.
Yeah, I think that one of the things I like about the women's game is the style that they're playing.
Yeah.
They're moving the game forward. Like, you look at Alyssa Healy up the top, and that's only happened the last few years. She was up and down the order, but they've made a brave decision to say, you know what, you're a match winner. We're going to put you at the top of the order. We're going to back you now leading into the World Cup. And look what she's done. Because there was question marks about, do we batter up the order? Is she better to bat in the middle order? But they put her up the top, and she's basically gone out there and won that tournament for Australia. So she had to as well, because her husband's got a Player of the Series World Cup medal, and now she can just push his to the back right and put hers right in front. So congratulations to the women and the style of the game that they're playing. It's just attractive to watch.
And the role model. So the fact is, Hasto, the number one growing part of cricket, as you said off the top, which needs a bit of love at the moment, is our young girls. So they must look at those girls and go, I just want to be them. And then parents are going, I want you to be them, because there's no drama. They just get on with it, and they're just really wonderful people as much as they are cricketers.
Yeah, they go about it in a really good light, don't they, Gus? And that's what I'm loving, and especially all sports at the moment. You look at the AFLW down here in Melbourne, and then you look at Steph Gilmore is just, you know, 7-time world surfing champion as well. So there's a lot of great role models out there for young females in sport, and I just think it's absolutely fantastic.
You're right. You've got your Ash Barty, won the Newcombe medal during the week as well, and the rugby league up here with the women's tournament in Sydney, Hasto, is going great guns. That's going to be growing each year as well. So there's certainly some stuff there that us men can look at and take just take the note that perhaps that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and I reckon it's just a great story. Let's take out that it's women's sport for a sec. It's just a great Australian story.
Yeah.
For the way that they went over, the style that they played in that World Cup, they had a hiccup during the middle of the tournament. They lost the game to India.
Yeah, but they got touched up in that game, actually, didn't they?
They did, and that's a big mental thing to overcome for those girls as well, because a couple of times the Indians have got hold of them and really moved the game forward. So it shows there's great character in the team, and it's just a great story for everyone to be involved in it. And for a cricket point of view, it's just great for us, for where our game's at the moment, just to have a great story and these great role models and the way they presented themselves over there.
Nice to beat the Poms in the final too, convincingly.
What a good.
Hasto, I know that the women BBL starts today at the Junction Oval, and you've got the other games here as well for our listeners who want to perhaps get out there and enjoy it.
Yep, they've dubbed it the big weekend down here at the magnificent Junction Oval, kicking us off with Meg Lanning's actually gone to the Perth Scorcher. She did that last season, but she was out all season with a shoulder injury. So Perth v Hobart Hurricanes to kick us off, and then they've got a second game straight afterwards, the Melbourne Stars versus the Sydney Sixers. Come on, the Sixers. And then on Sunday, would they go again?
Do you believe him for a second, Has?
Mate, you know what? I think he's always wanted to be a Sixer. I don't think he suited the Melbourne Stars. I think when we got John back, I said before, we got him back for his experience with the ball and things, but he sort of suited our culture a bit.
Yeah.
And I think he always had that little bit of magenta deep down.
I'm not the flashiness of the Melbourne Stars in my head. I'm just down to earth, get about your business,
what
work
do you mean?
Hard, drink a few
you,
frothies, and then all
you and KP,
go.
You and KP, just so similar.
Who?
Your characters. Sorry, we disturbed you. Go on with the other games.
As I was saying on Sunday, the Adelaide Strikers kick us off against the Brisbane Heat and then the Renegades and Thunder. So the first round of the WBBL today at the Junction Oval. So that'll be magnificent.
And we need to talk about India, boys. India are here, and thank God, really, they're going to save the summer. The crowd, in their own right, have just done an amazing job so far with the T20s. But let's talk, Hasto, firstly, what are your thoughts on the Indian team and their chances of knocking over Australia for the first time in a Test series?
Well, Gussie, I actually think that they've got their own sort of issues. I know that there's been a lot of talk about the Australian team and whether or not we can structure up and how we're going to structure up with our batting lineup and all that sort of thing. But I think India have got their own sort of issues. Don't get me wrong, they are a very, very good side led by a very, very good captain and the world's best batter in Virat Kohli. But I think with their lineup, they're not really sure what sort of bowling attack they're going to go with. I don't think they're they don't know their best top six. So the one guy that I'm looking forward to the most to have a look at is a guy by the name of Priti Shaw. He's a young 19-year-old who's drawn comparisons to the great Sachin Tendulkar. Ravi Shastri came out yesterday and said he's a little bit of Sachin Tendulkar, he's a little bit of Virender Sehwag, and he walks like Brian Lara. So if that's not a big rap, then I don't know what is. And that's coming from one of the greats of Indian cricket in Ravi Shastri. So I'm looking forward to seeing him, but I'm just not too sure if they're too sure about their top six and the way they're going to structure up. Murali Vijay hasn't had a really good 12 months for them. I think Rohit Sharma will come back into the mix as well because of his record against Australia, not in Test cricket, but in the white ball sort of setup. So I don't know. KL Rahul, do they open with him? Pujara, where does he bat? We know that Kohli's going to bat four, but you know, I think they've got their real issues in terms of trying to structure up a winning formula.
Hads, when you see this team, what are you looking at? India, they're ranked number one in the world, but they don't particularly travel that well, and they've never beaten Australia in a Test series here.
Yeah, India are no different to most international teams about they don't travel well and play away from home. I know there's a lot of talk at the moment about their fast bowls, about Sharma, Yadav and Shami being able to take 20 wickets. And that's been one of their biggest problems coming to Australia is their bowlers don't get their length right. They get carried away. We talk a lot about the bounce in Australia and it looks pretty carrying through the keeper just under nipple height, but you need to be full. You need to get the ball nice and full so the batters are playing off the front foot and you give yourself an opportunity to swing it and get caught behind the wicket. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get their length right. I actually think they've got a big decision to make with their spinners.
Yep.
Traditionally, Ashwin doesn't do really well over here in Australia. You got Jadeja who won't get any turn, and left-arm orthos in Australia are traditionally easier to play. But they've got a young kid called Kuldeep Yadav, who played in the 2020 series as a left-arm wrist spinner. And Australia have had a bit of Achilles heel against wrist spinners. So will India be brave and lead their two most experienced spinners out and go a young kid? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what Kohli's mindset. And I think when you're talking about openers there, I think they will bring Rohit Sharma in, but I think they'll put him down at six.
Yep.
Traditionally, that's where you need someone who can handle the new ball and also move the game forward, bat different situations. He's got a good defence in Australian conditions, but also if he gets in, he can change the momentum of the game. So there's a big call on Shaw to see on the next.
Well, he started off beautifully, played against the West Indies, obviously not a quality side at the moment, missing so many good players that don't even play Test cricket, unfortunately. It's another story perhaps for another day. But Hasto, he's such a young player, he's so little. He just looks like he's a mascot, doesn't he? And he's the only one that's on social media all the time, and he's buzzing. Yeah. He got some runs in the lead-up game against Australian 11. So we're excited to see blokes like that. And the Aussie crowd, we do get behind young blokes, don't we, generally?
Yeah, we do. And interesting thing is he's got 100 in every format that he's debuted in, on debut. So when he got into, you know, domestic T20, 100, debut. When it was first-class cricket, 100, debut. Test match cricket, 100, debut. So he's a real star. Whether or not he can handle the conditions over here, we're not too sure yet. So that'll be tested and we'll get to see that next week.
How good would it be, though, walking out and the young kid walking past you, you'd have to say, mate, there's a lot of expectation on you here.
Exactly.
This is not sledging.
No.
This is just banter.
Yeah.
Yep. Say, mate, there's a lot of expectation. Everyone thinks you're the next Tendulkar. And then there's only a billion people wanting you to do well. And by the way, Mitchell Stark's got a new ball and he was swinging it a lot in warm-up. So good luck. I'm looking forward to see this.
I think all our listeners just got a little insight into what a few players have heard as you've walked past them. Boys, let's put the left one on the line. Will India, for the first time, win a Test series against Australia in Australia? Haystack.
Look, I actually think it's going to be a ripping series. I don't think there'll be a draw all series. I was having a look at it before. I reckon the first Test in Adelaide, I'm going to say India are going to win. The second Test in Perth, the bounce and fastness of the pitch will be too much for them, so Australia will win. I think Australia will win at the MCG with a pitch that's going to have a bit more coverage of grass on it that the curator's come out and said he's going to try and liven the MCG up. And then in Sydney, if it's a traditional Sydney pitch, then I think the Indian spinners will come into play, and I'm going to say it's going to be 2-2.
2-2. What do you think,
Hats? Sitting on the fence with splinters.
Mate, I was just going about it. You've spent a minute getting in splinters right up your ass. What do you think, Hats?
I'm a bit different. I think Adelaide Oval will move around a bit.
Are you disappointed it's not a pink ball test? India said they didn't want to have the day-night test. Are you disappointed with that? The Ashes last year was brilliant there, wasn't it?
One thing I'm disappointed in my career is I didn't get the opportunity to play in a pink ball test. And if I'm honest, I didn't think it was going to work. But after being involved with the coaching staff on how much Adelaide Oval embraced the pink ball, the crowds, the spectacle, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think India, the reason they didn't want to play is because the ball swings around a little bit more. But from a pure spectator point of view, can you remember Australia won, but Jimmy Anderson swinging that ball to Sean Marsh, he got through the swinging balls for about an hour and a half. The contest was great. How they've done Adelaide Oval now, where you walk across the bridge, the whole town was buzzing. So, yeah, I am disappointed that they're not playing. And for that reason, I don't think they'll win in Adelaide.
Okay.
Because karma comes back to get them. and I think the new wicket in Perth, I think the bounce will be too much.
So you've got us 2-0 at the moment.
2-0. I think if there's going to be a draw, maybe in Melbourne. I'm worried about that wicket.
Yeah,
It's been dead for a little while now, hasn't it?
And I think that the best chance is if Sydney's a traditional Sydney wicket, but we've also got probably Nathan Lyner at the moment. It's the best spinner in the world, so that plays in our favour. So
yep.
I'm definitely going to say we're going to win 2-1.
I just wanted to talk for a moment about playing cricket in India. You blokes have done it, but also supporting in India over the last couple of nights. An Aussie Goes Bolly, a show that I did back about 10 years ago, has been on the telly, and just so many wonderful memories of actually going to India and realising it's not just talk. Religion is one thing they all have, and that perhaps those religions are all a little bit different. But the one thing they can absolutely agree on is their love for the Indian cricket team. And at the time, Sachin Tendulkar was the man. What was it like for you guys just going to India and playing there?
Yeah, I think the first time I went, it was more shock. It's just the sheer passion that they had for the game. And I'd only played a couple of first-class games when I went over in 2001 on standby for a test match, but you're mobbed. You can't walk through the airport. Their passion that they have for the game, it's infectious. It can also be really, really intimidating because they're so in your face, not because they're rude. It's just that their love for the sport and they want to get close to the stars.
Yeah, I think, well, for me, from my point of view, it's like this could be my one opportunity, Hasto,
yeah,
to be close to an Australian cricketer or a cricketer full stop. So I need to take it. And, of course, when everyone thinks that at the same time, if there's five people in Australia, there's 1,000 in India.
Yeah, and the one thing that sticks out for me in my mind about going to India, you'd remember this, Hads, is that during the 2011 World Cup, we had this pack that we'd all walk out on the field together, and it was the quarterfinal in Ahmedabad, I reckon, and we went out there, and they were already swinging from the rafters. There was this 50,000 seat capacity, and I think there was about another 20,000 outside the stadium trying to get in, and once again, we did what we had always done that tournament, walked out as a team and showed a bit of, you know, solidarity and strength. And we just hear this massive, deafening boo all around the ground. And I just thought, this is absolutely amazing. How good is this?
Did you ever have anything thrown at you? Because a couple of times at the end of the game, we'd have a chat. Like, I saw one the other day had you won a man of the match for your batting. Gilly was the keeper, so you'd been fielding as well. I think you might have taken a couple of catches. So you and I were right near the boundary, and I had a what they call a popsicle. It's like what we'd call an ice cream or an ice block thrown at the back of me and stuff. Did you have anything thrown at you?
Well, because I was a keeper, I was shielded from a lot of the stuff that went on the boundary, but I was lucky enough to play a couple of games as a batsman, and I didn't really understand the boundary etiquette. So I got hit one day with a pair. So, and you normally meant just to kick it off and put it to the side. So I've just
You could eat it.
I'm not over there.
No.
So I've backhand flicked it back into the crowd, and I heard it. So I've obviously got someone, so I didn't turn around. And probably 15 seconds later, I was bombarded. There was like a fruit salad at my feet. Things were coming from everywhere. Security were running, whacking the fence.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
At the same time, I remember you in the stand where there was a lot going on. There was the crowd were being probably not as friendly as they...
Yeah, you're talking about the Andrew Simon situation. Yeah. Well, that particular one, Hads and John, was probably the only difficult time in the three shows that we shot, which was just so much fun. But that's the only time where actually me and Maddie, who was the camera guy, ever felt in any sort of danger.
Yep.
And it was because they were being, you know, there's no two words about it. They were being racist towards Simo. They were making monkey calls. They were doing the hand and the arm gestures. They were being disgusting and disrespectful. And he was right on the boundary. And it really, really shook me up because I was the only, I looked around, there was no other Aussie sort of supporter. So I really felt that, you know me, I wouldn't fight anyone at any stage, unless you mess with my kids or my wife, I'm pretty sort of.
Or Andrew Simons.
Yeah. Well, I just sort of went, you know what? What's going on here? So, and then all of a sudden the fence started shaking, and you really felt like there's 40 odd thousand people here that are up against it. So we got security, took us down onto the field, and then the conversation started, and I couldn't repeat it, Hasto, on what was said, but it would have been exactly what you and all our listeners would have been thinking. Don't pick on a bloke for his colour and the fact that he may look different to what you think someone should look like. It was a disgraceful bit of behaviour, and that then kicked on to everything that we had here in Sydney in that Sydney Test match. Simo and Tendulkar and that team never quite got over that again.
No, they can get a little bit blinded at times and passionate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is just passion, and I'm sure they don't really mean to cross the line like that, but they just get this haze over them and they go absolutely berserk. And I've been on I used to try and hide in the ring because I didn't have a great shoulder, but every now and then I'd find myself on the boundary and the abuse would be coming left, right and centre. So I know what you're talking about there, Gus.
Boys, let's talk about something that has been, well, I start with the real controversy that started the downfall of cricket in this country in terms of there's pretty much no one left around that sort of South Africa drama with Sandpapergate, with David Warner, Bancroft and Stephen Smith. I want to talk about integration back into the side for those blokes. But just for anyone who doesn't know, Hasto in particular, I've spoken about it on the Grill team here in Sydney, but Steve Smith has been with my foundation, Gotcha for Life, going around to schools as part of his 100-hour community service.
Brilliant.
So rather than just going to a cricket ground and, you know, throwing some balls and just doing something that would have been so easy, he's been extremely brave, extremely vulnerable, and extremely honest, and talking pretty much from the press conference in South Africa all the way through to the press conference where I think everyone changed their opinion on what had happened. When his dad put the arm on the shoulder, I think most of Australia's hearts broke at that moment because we took ourselves into that position. And the fact now that he's done so much wonderful work, he sits in front of schoolboys and says, it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to make a mistake, but as long as you are learning from your mistakes, you will be a better person for it. And he just can't wait. Now that the bans have been upheld and he is not appealing it, same as Warner, same as Bancroft, we now know that they can be selected for the World Cup. I imagine two out of three of those will.
Yeah, I think the clarity around the bans been outstanding because I think there's a lot of talk about whether the bans be lifted. Should we let them play state cricket for the benefit of other people coming through? But I think now that that's got clarity around that, they've lost that. There's a lot of false hope there. Yeah. And the one thing I like what Steve's doing with you, Gus, is he's shown that vulnerability side of himself. And I think as an Australian captain, you put on this mantle sometimes that you've got everything under control. Like, yeah, I can control this. I know what's going on here. I'm the Australian captain. I'll score you 100 here. and I know the right things to do all the time. But I think with what he's showing now, with the vulnerability, the way he's talking with the kids, and as you've said off air, Steve has saved people's lives. People don't realise the work he's doing away from the game is actually having a huge effect on other kids' lives. So I like that he's been a bit vulnerable and shown that other side of him, because one thing is, and Haysto, I'm sure, will back this up, Steve Smith is a really good person.
Mm. Yeah. He is. He's an absolute ripper. And I've spent a lot of time with him, obviously being from New South Wales and growing up and playing some junior stuff with him. He's only a year younger than I am, or a couple of years younger. And I my heart broke for him throughout this whole thing, as it did, you know, the other two as well. But one thing I wanted to ask you, Gus, as well, is that how's he being received out there in the public? I'm just seeing an amazing amount of support from my point of view. I haven't been to any of the grade cricket grounds or anything like that, but obviously you've been working closely with him. How's he been received?
Well, Haysto, certainly at the schools, there's been schools where the school have decided just to have a smaller group, maybe just the prefects or the leaders going from year 11 to year 12. We've had some schools that are 2,500 people. There was one that we went to, every single person stood up. They didn't know he was coming, and they just said, Gus Wallen from Triple M's grill team, bring a special guest here today. His name is Stephen Smith. And that was it. And we walked down, and the boys, without anyone saying, they just felt like they had to stand.
Yeah,
they just wanted to stand. And as we got up on stage and the noise was deafening, he said, that's like walking out the Boxing Day test match at the MCG. That's how loud it was. And then we've had other schools where he's just sat down with 40 or 50 boys and he's just told his story. And he's done it with such vulnerability and such honesty, as I've said, where we've had teachers then phone us up at the end of the day or the couple of weeks later saying, we've had some boys come up and say, if Steve Smith can say that it's okay to be vulnerable, I want to tell you, this is how I'm feeling. And the parents, the school, the community had no idea that those boys were going through those difficulties. And that's, of course, what Australian men are about. We're trying to live up to this stereotype of she'll be right, be stoic. There's nothing wrong with all that stuff, but if you are feeling dark, you need to put your hand up, and that's what he's been able to do. And I think his dad's very proud of him too, that he's got something a little bit outside of cricket as well, just to keep his mind busy, because as you blokes would know better than me, any spare second, he just, you know, even when we're standing there, you know, he's always just playing a cricket shot. He's always fidgeting. And now he's got married, he's fidgeting with that wedding ring the whole time as well. But let's talk also about David Warner, because I went to a grade game, Haysto. You wouldn't believe a couple of thousand people there.
Amazing.
Every time he bats, he gets 100 or 150 not out. Mm. He's been well received as well. So I imagine, Hads, that you would quite happily have both those players integrated into the World Cup and then straight away into an Ashes series in England.
Yeah, I think the one thing David's done really well, he's come straight out and owned the mistake. We've all made mistakes. We're all not angels. Yep. But the one thing he's done, he's come straight out and owned it. And the one thing I know about David Warner, he's a street fighter. He's, if you look at him now, he's in unbelievable condition. His fitness levels and what he's doing to himself to come back a better version of David Warner is hats off. Every time he bats in grade cricket at the moment, he scores 100 or he has an influence in a good way on the result of the game. He's a leading run scorer, I think, in grade cricket at the moment. So he's doing all the right things to get back. Yes, there's been mistakes in the past from a lot of people, but he's owned that and now he's getting on to, when he comes back. I think he'll be a better cricketer now than when he comes back.
Hey, so there's one thing that one person's sort of forgotten in this, a 9-month ban for Bancroft, which is nearly up.
Mm.
So what do you do there with Bancroft? He was in the team at the time, of course, and no one has sort of stood up and said, right, I'm going to take his position. Do you think he will get the same sort of straight back in, or do you think more runs at Shield level and then he'll get that chance?
Well, I think he, like the other two, Cameron Bancroft, has done absolutely everything possible. He's always been a very hard worker, and that's one thing that Justin Langer loved about him and his teammates in WA. So he's been doing exactly the same thing as Steve Smith and David Warner, but obviously being over in the West, he probably doesn't get as publicised as it would over here on the Eastern Seaboard. So for me, he slots back into any team possible, maybe not the Test team and such. I'd love to see him finish off the year in Sheffield Shield really, really well and contribute to some wins and play really well for WA. But in terms of sliding back in for the Perth Scorchers, I think they'd have him in a heartbeat. I've always been of the bigger picture that the bans have been a little bit too harsh. But what I am grateful for now is that there's been closure and clarity, as we've said, and now we can move on and these guys can go about, you know, repairing their reputations and coming back into the fold in Australian cricket, which I'm very excited about.
Let's put some predictions into the summer vault. Firstly, you, Hasto, you said that it's going to be 2-2 this series. Hadge, you said it's going to be 2-1 to Australia. Okay, who's going to get the most runs?
For me, I'm going to say it's going to be King Kohli. I just think he's an absolute superstar. And if India are going to be any hope of winning, they're going to need him to fire. But I reckon he's just the class of him and just what he brings to the table. He's going to be the leading run scorer. I've got Josh Hazlewood as my most wickets and player of the series. So I think if Australia are going to win, he's going to need to be the man for Australia with the ball. But the bolter that I've got in my little sheet here is pretty sure. Any man that can draw comparisons to Tendulkar and Lara in the same sentence, then I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the table.
No pressure. And like you said earlier in the show, every time he's played something for the first time or been somewhere for the first time, he gets a big 100.
Even marbles, he wins.
There you go. What about you, Hads? Who are your predictions to whack in the vault?
Yeah, Hasto took a couple then. I'll change with Shaw.
Okay.
I think he's going to have a torrid time in Australia, and I don't think you'll get 100 runs for the series. I think Josh Hazlewood will also be player of the series. I think for Australia to be dominant.
Mitch Stark's just driven off the road, by the way.
Stark and Cummins will compliment him, but I just think Josh Hazlewood will stand up. I think the vice captaincy suits him, and I think his style will be, guys, jump on and follow me.
Yep.
And I think Khawaja will cement himself as Australia's number one batsman.
Well, that'll be absolutely fantastic. Let's hope so. Boys, it's been a heap of fun, and I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Brad Haddon, John Hastings, really appreciate your time on the first episode of Willow Talk. Have a wonderful summer, boys, and we'll speak to you at some stage. Gus Wallen here. We'll be back next week, as I said, with Mark Howard, much more professional than I am, Adam Gilchrist, much better than you are, Hads, and Greg Blewett, who, as far as I'm concerned, probably prettier than you, Hasto, but not as good a cricketer.
That's Stumps on Triple M's Willow Talk.
Yes, they've done well.
Want a head start on the show for next week? Catch your 10 a.m. Saturdays on Triple M. Need the edge? Has to be Irwin. Available at Bunnings Warehouse. Irwin, trade strong.